as he said, my name is Attila. I'm from UC Davis, and I'm also supported by the Lawrence Scholar Program at Lawrence Livermore National Lab. And I'm going to be presenting a new algorithm for computing the Morse-Mill complex today. So, why do we do topology-based visualization? Well, scalar functions are everywhere in scientific computing, and we all know they're growing in size and complexity. To really understand what's going on, we need a global analysis structure, or at least it's very useful. And we've all seen some examples by now of how useful the Morse-Mill complex in particular can be. So 2 years ago, the analysis of the turbulent mixing of bubbles using the Morse-Mill complex won best application paper. It's been used to re-quadrangulate surfaces. Last year, I presented a paper here on using the arcs of the Morse-Mill complex to extract a core structure from a porous medium. And we're currently undergoing research involving segmenting flame surfaces using the Morse-Mill complex. So it's very useful. It seems like we can already do this stuff. Why do we care? Well, part of the problem with previous methods is that they're particular for either two-dimensional data or three-dimensional data or simplicial complexes with piecewise linear interpolance or gridded data. So we really want a more general method that extends to higher dimensions and general data formats also. And the biggest problem is that previous methods compute the entire Morse-Mill complex before they can simplify it. So this is a problem because even for small data sets that are very complex, the output is too big to fit into memory or to perform any practical computation. And this limits your ability to compute things both with data set size and the complexity. So this is a very bad situation. So what I'm going to present today is this new algorithm for constructing the Morse-Mill complex. It uses discrete Morse theory for a very simple, general dimensional implementation that supports many data formats such as AMR, simplicial meshes, gridded data, and it's robust and combinatorial in nature. Also, it uses a divide and conquer approach for a very low memory footprint and on-the-fly simplification of the output. So you can simplify the output before you have the entire Morse-Mill complex. So you can control the size of the output. And this allows us to process very complex data. And then I'm going to show a result where we demonstrate the computation of the Morse-Mill complex on a billion node data set on my home computer. So some background first. A critical point of a scalar function is a point where the gradient vanishes. For a two-dimensional function, we have these three kinds of critical points. You have a minimum, where the gradient points away from the minimum in a small neighborhood around it, because the function's increasing everywhere. At a saddle, the function's decreasing in two directions, increasing in two directions. So you have two regions where the gradient points towards the saddle and two regions where it points away from the saddle. At a maximum, the function's decreasing in every direction, so the gradient points towards the maximum. So if all the critical points of a Morse function are non-degenerate, meaning the determinant of the Hessian, which is the matrix of second partial derivatives, is non-zero, then f is a Morse function. So here's some smooth scalar function with continuous derivatives, and it has a continuous gradient field. So the integral line passing through a point agrees with the gradient at every point on that line. And this line has an origin and destination, which are critical points of the function. And these are respectively the lower and upper limits of the integral line. And notice that two critical points can be connected by an infinite number of integral lines. And these integral lines actually give us a way to segment this data set. And that's what the Morse-Mill complex is. It's a segmentation of the domain into regions of uniform gradient flow behavior. So let's look at this more closely with an example. So here we have a two-dimensional scalar function. So here the function value is the height of this terrain. There are some integral lines on this. And if we look at the gradient, we can find critical points where the gradient vanishes. Then if you look at these integral lines, you actually start noticing a pattern where clusters of these integral lines start at a unique origin and destination. And that segmentation of the domain is what the Morse-Mill complex is. So in any one of these the cells of this Morse-Mail complex. Here you have three kinds of cells. You have the nodes, which are just the critical points themselves. You have the arcs, which are integral lines connecting critical points that differ in dimension by one. And here you and two cells, which are these quadrangular sections, which connect, which are composed of integral lines whose origin and destination differ in dimension by two. So this is a segmentation of the Morse-Mail complex. This is all fine for continuous functions where you have a well-defined gradient, but in practice we get data from applications as a bunch of discrete samples over some space. So how do we relate these two things? Well, you can go through all the degeneracies and all the horrible configurations with any interpolant you want, but we use a much simpler approach. So it's much easier to work with the discrete gradient field, as we call it, which you can imagine has arrows from a cell to another representing the gradient flow. So in, as a convention in discrete gradient fields, we imagine that the gradient points downwards. So a cell can be paired with one of its facets or cofacets. So I'm going to briefly introduce some terminology here. The faces of a cell are the cells in the closure of that cell. For example, the faces of the quad here are the edges and vertices around the quad. The cofaces are cells whose closure contain that cell. So for example, the closure of this edge here would be the quad. Or sorry, the cofaces of this edge would be the quad. Facets are faces with dimension differing by one, and cofacets are cofaces with dimension differing by one. So, armed with that, we can see that here our gradient arrows pair a D-1 cell with a D cell as the tail and head of a gradient arrow, and this pairs, so for example, a vertex can be paired with its cofacet and edge, and an edge can be paired with a cofacet, which is a face. This gives us a general idea of flow in this discrete case, and so we have the same thing we had in the continuous case. We had integral lines in the continuous case. In this case, we have gradient paths. So a gradient path is just a sequence of gradient vectors where the next pair is a facet of the head of the current pair. So here we have a facet of this cell. Its gradient arrow points to the next cell. Its facet has a gradient arrow pointing to the next cell, and so on. Just like in the continuous case where we had critical points where the gradient vanishes, we have a similar situation in the discrete case where we say that unpaired cells in the discrete gradient vector field are critical because there's no flow. So the index of criticality is given by the dimension of the cell. So you have an unpaired vertex becomes a minimum in this two-dimensional function, an unpaired edge becomes a saddle, and an unpaired quad becomes a maximum. Now using these critical cells and gradient paths, we have a similar notion for the Morse-Mail complex. In the continuous case, this is a cell of the Morse-Mail complex consisted of integral lines that shared a common origin and destination. In the discrete case, a cell of a complex is just the paths that share a common origin and destination. And if you actually look at it, I mean, the structures here in this particular example are identical, but that's not hard to do with a contrived example. But there is actually some geometrical meaning to all this discretization. So our algorithm, the absolute core of the algorithm, what it does is it takes a mesh and it assigns a discrete gradient vector field to that mesh, because that discrete gradient vector field will have a unique Morse-Mail complex. So here's an example. We have some mesh here. The first thing we got to do in discrete Morse theory is assign a value to every cell. So what we do is we pick the maximum value of a cell's faces, and then symbolically perturb it to be higher. So for example, this edge here takes the value of 3 because it's higher vertex has a value of 3. This quad takes a value of 4 because that's its highest vertex, and so on. Now, We construct a discrete gradient field by iterating first through dimension and then through cells in sorted order. So we start this algorithm off by looking at zero cells, which are the vertices. And we pick the lowest cell, the lowest vertex, and say, can we pair this? Can we create a gradient arrow with this cell? And we can pair two cells if the co-facet has only one unmarked facet, and the gradient arrow points downwards. So in this particular case, no, we can't pair this vertex with any of its edges, so we mark it as a critical point. Repeat this process, get the next lowest vertex, ask, can we pair it? Now there are three candidates here. In fact, you can pair this in one of the directions, so we form that gradient pair. Now we mark both vertex and edge as having been processed by the algorithm. And we do this over and over again until all the vertices have been marked, and either marked as critical or paired in a gradient path. Notice that some of the edges have now been paired also, but not all of them. So, next step of the algorithm, now we look at edges. Again, we pick the lowest edge and ask, can this be paired? That's its only candidate for pairing. And no, you can't create a gradient arrow that points downwards there. So, you mark it as critical. And so on until you've marked all the edges as either critical or part of some gradient arrow. Now we look at the two cells. All remaining two cells will not be able to be paired with anything, so they're all marked as critical. So now we have the discrete gradient fields. It's a very simple algorithm to compute it. How do you get the Morse-Mill complex out of it? Well, actually, the Morse-Mill complex is uniquely determined by a discrete gradient field. All you have to do is trace paths. The nodes are the critical cells. The nodes of the complex are the critical cells you get, and you can find the connections between them by tracing paths upwards and downs. This also gives you the actual cells of the Morse-Mill complex, so it gives you geometry also. So now that we can compute the Morse-Mill complex on a mesh, we actually got the overall divide-and-conquer algorithm we came up with. So there are four parts to this algorithm. First, we partition, you know, the large mesh, the large data we're working with into memory-friendly parcels. And then on each parcel, we're going to compute the discrete gradient. So this is independently on each parcel. We're going to compute the discrete gradient, the Morse-Mill complex, and then simplify the portion of the Morse-Mill complex that are independent and only local to that particular parcel. Once we've computed all this on parcels individually, we start merging them back together again. So we glue the meshes together, compute the gradient and complex on the merge interface, connect the complexes, and simplify again. And then finally, at the end, we deal with things like boundary conditions. So we're going to look at this in a bit more detail. So first, looking at partitioning the mesh into parcels. This is pick your favorite partition algorithm. Every cell is represented in exactly one parcel. And for performance purposes, it's better if your parcels are simply connected. So it's not a total random partitioning, but we could handle that also. So for example, here we have our data set, this two manifold, and we cut it into two parcels. On each parcel, we are first going to classify each cell if it's exterior boundary or interior to that parcel. So exterior are cells where some faces are not in the parcel, and they're marked with green. Boundary, all faces are in the parcel, but co-faces can be not in the parcel or marked as exterior. Interior faces are interior cells are cells where all the faces and co-faces are in the parcel, and there are no faces or co-faces exterior or outside the parcel. So here I've marked the interior with gray, boundary with orange, and exterior with green. Now that we have this classification, we can just run our core algorithm to compute the discrete gradient in each parcel. The only condition we have is that we ignore the exterior cells and we do not allow flow to cross the boundary. So if we reach an cell on the boundary, and the gradient says I want to pair it with either direction, we just mark it as a critical cell. So we have the discrete gradient. All we do is trace paths, find the Morse-Mill complex on each parcel. The nodes, again, are the critical points, and tracing downwards in this will give you all the connections and the cells of the complex. Very simple. Now, what this lets us do is we have computed independently complexes and discrete gradients on each parcel. And what we can do is perform on-the-fly simplification of the Morse-Mill complex. So when two critical points are both interior to a parcel, you can cancel them both without affecting, with basically a guarantee that performing that cancellation will not affect the complex anywhere outside the parcel, because cancellations have a local area of effect. So this lets us simplify the Morse-Mill complex even before we have the Morse-Mill complex of the entire data set. And another optimization we can do is we can remove the discrete gradient from memory on the internal portion of the cells, on the internal cells. So this gives us a huge, this is what makes the divide and conquer worth it. This lets us reduce the size of the output and also make the memory usage have a very low footprint. So now we start merging cells. It's very simple. All you do is glue the meshes together, rerun your classification to find out what's newly interior, exterior boundary, compute the discrete gradient again on it. You're guaranteed not to have flow crossing the old boundaries, so all your flow is going to be within this narrow strip, your merge interface. And the Morse-Mill complex you trace from that is only going to touch cells or nodes and critical points that have already been identified on the boundary of your Morse-Mill complexes on the two sides. So this glues the complexes together also. And then you can do, again, on-the-fly simplification of the Morse-Mill complex and remove the gradient on the interior. So it's basically the same process that we had originally. Then once we've done gluing all the parcels we can back together again, we finalize the complex. This means handling boundary conditions such as periodic boundary, where we just glue one side of the data back to the other, run the same merging algorithm. Or we can do simplification of low persistence pairs to remove boundary artifacts, anything that might have cropped up. And then we can do further filtering to answer really the scientific questions and find the features in the data. So in our example, we did an implementation, a very simple implementation, where here there is an interleaving of creating the parcels and merging them. And we did this with a slice-by-slice approach. So each parcel is created, one slice of the data is read at a time, and you create a slice of vertices, edges, and quads, and a slice gluing it to this growing base layer. So you perform the algorithm to compute stuff on the parcel, and then merge it with this growing base layer. And this has some artifacts, because there's order dependence in all this. We created a bunch of flat regions in the original, the assigning values to every cell. But if you notice, they're only off by half a cell. So this is performing the slice-by-slice approach in the x direction and in the y direction. The locations of these can be off by half a cell, yeah. And we just consider this to be sort of a noise artifact. So doing this kind of on-the-fly simplification lets us analyze really complex data. So here, this is a over 1 billion node data set. What we're able to do is say, okay, I don't want the Morse-Mill complex to grow over 1.3 gigabytes, because that's how much memory I have on my computer. The overhead for computing the discrete gradient, the parcels, all that was only 42 megabytes, very small memory footprint. So it's all controlling our limiting factor is how big we could make the final output. So, I mean, it took a long time to run. But if you actually look at the individual times for computing the discrete gradient and the merging parcels, that's very reasonable. And it's really this simplification, the removing the extra critical points that took the long amount of time. And you can argue that, well, that is the topology that was inherent in this data set anyway, so we had to perform this canceling of 100 million critical points anyway to get some meaningful topology out of it. So even so, you have a whole bunch of critical points and edges left. This is just a proof of concept. So in conclusion, what we did was have a very simple algorithm that's general in dimension. So when I say general in dimension, you always have to say, well, memory footprint scales with as n to the d minus 1 over d for d-dimensional data. This corresponds to a single merge interface from basically two halves of the data. The major points is that we can simplify noise before the entire complex is computed. So this allows direct control of the size of the output and is very useful for denoising. We can handle data given as scalar values as vertices of a regular CW complex. So it's not just gridded data. So this covers AMR data, gridded data, and simplicial meshes, because discrete Morse theory is general enough to handle all of this. And the gradient is constructed in n log n, because we have to sort the vertices. And finally, it's a combinatorial method. We didn't have to resort to numerical integration anywhere to decide steepest paths. So in the future, we're going to look at smoothing out the geometry we get from this. This algorithm really presents itself as very good for parallelizing. So we're going to try parallel implementation, and then look maybe at time-varying complexes. And our major goal immediately is looking at applications in particular, so scientific applications, and getting this stuff out to the scientific community so they can use it. Thanks.
Does anybody have questions? Well, in which case it's incumbent upon the chair of the panel to come up with some tricky questions. So let me start off by asking. We all know that the Morse-Smale complex is based on the gradient lines and is therefore related to vector topology. Does any of this carry over to computations that you can perform with generalized vector fields rather than gradient fields?
Well, it's a bit tricky because a lot of the algorithm relies on the fact that the gradient field you produce is acyclic. So there are no cycles in it. And in a generalized vector topology, you can have these cycles. And so I'm not sure exactly how it would relate. So it would definitely be something to look into, because, I mean, the discrete vector field definitely has advantages because it's combinatorial in nature and whatever. But there are certain things that you would have to ensure for correctness. So it's a very complicated thing to do.
Anybody got another question? Say, if you could move to the microphone so it gets picked up for the recording purposes.
Great work. Congratulations. I would like to ask a question concerning the stability. If you change your input a little bit, just assume you have a little bit fuzzy data and whatever, how stable is the algorithm? Are things very easy to go into change? Do they have global changes? Or do you have any feeling how stable the situation would be if you change your input a little bit?
Well, we perform all our cancellations basically in order of persistence, so it is very stable under small changes like that. So, for example, if you were to intersperse noise with your data set, that would be immediately filtered away as low persistence features. So it really wouldn't affect the output.
So I have a question about cancellation. So doesn't this affect the order of the cancellation if you make this divide and conquer step? Because it can be that things should be cancelled first which are not in one part.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And the reason we can do cancellations is that we only cancel things when they are interior to a parcel. So if you remember the index lemma from Morse theory, it says that you can cancel a pair of critical points that are connected by an arc, and it has only a local area of effect. So when we perform a cancellation on the interior of a parcel, it corresponds to a local smoothing of the function. And by ensuring that both the nodes that we cancel are interior to the parcel, you're guaranteed that this local smoothing won't sort of flow won't have any effect on the rest of the data. So it is really a local operation. So I mean, there are definitely global features, but you will not be able to cancel them because it will show up as boundary critical points on your parcels. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Are there any other questions? Then let's thank the speaker again.